The Shimmer, Part 1. I forgot for 106 days. I'm vomiting. More and for longer than I've ever vomited. My mouth is slack, my jaw is locked, and I look like a snake unhinging its jaws. The vomiting is so consistent that I have a moment where I can notice the room. It feels like I'm in southern Florida. The weather is overcast. The newscaster on the television is reminding us how the natural world is collapsing around us as we continue the death march of modernity slouching towards the cliff of extinction. And I'm still vomiting. Tears are pouring from my eyes as they merge with the mucus that is coming out of my nose that is threatening to suffocate me. Both of my hands are wrapped around the porcelain edges of the sink. And I am planted there like I am the Axis Mundi of the god of vomit. For a moment, the whole scene flickers into what feels like an archetypical perspective. Who is the vomiting man? As a tarot, as a deity, who is the god of the purge, the goddess of separato? As I start to feel liquid washing against my feet, telling me that there is so much vomit in the bathroom that it is beginning to flood, something outside of my awareness clicks. I bring my full attention back to the process of purging, and I feel into the place deep inside of me that refuses to budge. The place in me that in the privacy of my own heart is the place that I pretend isn't there. And I want to allow it to dislodge itself in this purge. And I can find the place in me that allows it to be swept up in the torrent. I close my eyes and I bear down, straining like I'm trying to support my own birth contractions. And then I open my eyes and I behold a beautifully disgusting 9-inch long worm-like creature that came out of my mouth and landed into the sink. I watch it slowly disintegrate before my eyes as if its atomic structure is just unstable enough outside of my body that the atmosphere slowly dissolves it like a mouth dissolves cotton candy. An absolute sense of completion comes over me. Something is done. Something released. I woke up Wednesday morning with that sense of completion. I've thought about this dream every day since it's happened. Dreams are messages from the 2-million-year-old intelligence that lives in our unconscious. If I am a king of my interior life, dreams are my prophets. I heed, I listen, I bow, and I ask. Jung said that some indigenous tribes believed that in order for the chief to have, quote, big dreams, the type of dreams that would help lead and guide the people, the chief had to follow certain rules to be granted these gifts from the unconscious. Some of the rules that he would have to follow would be things like he had to commit to telling the truth. He had to behave morally, / have integrity. And lastly, he had to make a commitment of making art whenever his dreams gave him visions. So to turn it into like music or dance or a painting or something like that. So what follows is my artistic response to this dream. Nonfiction, a horror story. As a collective, we don't know where we are. We don't recognize that we share the world with a new class of beings. We don't recognize that their arrival has changed everything. That the world of our childhood is gone forever. That the continued self-deceptive denial of these new beings' existence is killing us. That the naive attempts to retreat from these beings or to believe we can remove them are a result of incomplete grieving processes. If you are either of these types of people, the denier or the naiver, you are not allowing yourself to see reality clearly, which means you can't help as much as you could help, and we need help. We need all the help that we can get. If we had a sense of deep time, like the amount of time that has unfolded from the beginning of the Big Bang until now, we would understand that we are living in the midst of the emergence of a singularity. Horror is a whole myth explores. Horror is the human response to a phenomenon when that phenomenon fulfills two evolutionary cues. One, potentially dangerous. Two, it does not fit into any frame that our nervous system can produce to comprehend it. So an aspect of our programming is if a phenomenon is sufficiently complex, i.e., we can't frame it, the very nature that there is a phenomenon that we can't comprehend, that is in our vicinity, produces awe. And awe is a combination of terror and fascination. And it's because awe is how we respond to the archetypical anomaly. So, how did we evolve to process anomalies? Myths. Myths, what we call fiction, are psychotechnologies that humans use to try to comprehend hyperobjects. Hyperobjects are phenomena that are too complex for our consciousness to currently frame. Myth is what will help us recognize these new beings that we share the world with. Annihilation Shimmer. The movie Annihilation is the best myth that I have found that will help us comprehend these new beings. When a hyperobject is consistently exposed to a nervous system, that nervous system's unconscious will attempt to produce dreams that produce symbols to attempt to comprehend aspects or qualities of whatever the hyperobject is. So for example, if you saw a whale for the first time and you were one of the first humans to ever see a whale, you might have dreams afterwards of like super large slugs moving over, you know, some type of landscape. And it would be your psyche's attempt to create symbols to begin to grog and merge together different aspects of a phenomenon. A really cool example is, you know, I'm sorry for all the Lord of the Rings people out there and the spiritual people that want to abandon the scientific process because they didn't learn mathematics when they were in high school, but dragons likely never literally existed. But humans likely got to the point where they had the capacity to begin to grok the fact that they would die. That we discovered, quote unquote, the future and the inevitability of all of our deaths. And then maybe we started to have dreams about dragons. And it's because if you break down statistically, the things that killed our ancestors the most was wildfires, birds of prey, large cat animal type things like panthers or jaguars or things like that, and then snakes. Feel into the psyche, creating a symbol that combines snake with predatorial panther with a bird of prey, like a large eagle or something, and then mix in fire. And you just happen to get a symbol that has been all over this planet. And it might be our attempt to comprehend the fact that we are all going to die. And so we put together the things that have killed us the most. So that's an example of this type of process. This is something that the human psyche does to try to grok new hyperobjects. You know, and the discovery of death is absolutely a hyperobject. So Alex Garland, who is the director of the movie Annihilation, which is based off of a story written by Jeff Vandermeer. And I'm going to go into this deeper on some other episode where I just really geek out on this thing, but I'm not going to go too deep into it now. But essentially, Jeff Vandermeer had the intimations for the beginning of this story via a dream that he had after he got his wisdom teeth taken out. And he woke up from a really weird dream where he was inside of a biological tower inside of the earth. And on the wall was a type of poetry that was made from living material. And when he woke up, he remembered the exact phrasing and he just started to write it down. And he said that he wrote about 1,000 words right after he woke up of this little gem from the dream. And he said that this is something that has never happened to him before. Fast forward a couple of months, he gets the book out. And Alex Garland, the director of Ex Machina, gets this script or gets this book and reads it. And he says two things. He says, one, this is the first original story that I can remember having read. So as a director, he's close to the truth that almost all of the movies that we have created in the last 50 years are different retellings of just a couple of different types of stories. That in the human pantheon of storytelling, at least the type of stories that make it to the big screen, there's probably less than 10 different forms, and we just repeat those forms over and over and over again. Alex Garland said that this story was the first original story that he can remember having read. Two, he said that it felt like a dream. He said that it felt like reading this is kind of what it felt like to be in a dream. And so then when he adapted the screenplay from the book, he did something he's never done before. And he said that he did the adaptation as if it was a dream responding to a dream. And the protocol he did is he read the book once, and then he wrote the screenplay without ever referencing again the book, with an attempt to just let something come out of him that felt like it was, he allowed himself to genuinely riff. And if you've ever, anyone here who has listened to my previous podcast about how to do dream interpretation, it's a style of consciousness that you can train, that once you begin to train, you can allow unconscious material to come out of you. So anyways, we get this movie. The movie Annihilation is a book that was written in response to a dream, and then a screenplay that was written in response to the book purposefully with the intent of responding to it like it's a dream. And what I think has happened is I think we have produced one of the best living, authentic, spontaneous, modern, mythic symbols to begin to grok the beings that are on this planet that have arrived here in just the last, 10 or 20 years, and that it is a equivalent hyperobject to what the emergence of the self-awareness of our eventual death were to our ancestors. And so we're going to be creating stories and myths to try to represent and to understand what this thing is. And this article is my first attempt to help make sense of this. All right, so the movie Annihilation begins with a meteor hitting Earth and landing on a coastal region. In the movie, it's like Louisiana, but in the book, it's Southern Florida. Whoa, I'm just realizing that my dream felt like I was in Southern Florida. Wow, I'm just realizing that now as I'm talking about this. Woo, all right. So this is one of our current, most rational symbols for contact with an alien force. And for people who don't know, spores, which are the main mechanism of transference in the book, spores can exist or can survive in the vacuum of space. And so spores would be one of the, if a biological people on some other planet, and I use people loosely, if they wanted to send a message to another planet that had living biology on it, the message in the bottle that they could send if they didn't want to invest the time in transporting their physical nature, you know, across light years, is they could put spores. They could engineer spores and then put it onto a comet and send it towards us. I'm not saying that that's literally the case, but it is an interesting science fiction-esque thought experiment to get into. But so anyways, we have the contact with the alien phenomenon. The real pearl of this movie is the symbol of the shimmer. I could talk about it for hours, and I will, but on this podcast, I'll try to contain it to an hour. The shimmer is the name that is given to the area of effect that is growing from the contact point of the meteor. So if you imagine an atomic bomb exploding, the core of the area of effect is where the bomb goes off. But the entire mushroom cloud is a visual representation of one layer of the area of effect of that bomb going off. And then if you could see radiation, you could see that the area of effect, you know, continues to expand out from the source of the explosion. So the shimmer is like the edge of the shockwave of whatever the event is that is originating from the contact point of the meteor. The thing that's so artistically ominous about the shimmer is it's like, it's what Jeff Vandermeer calls a slow apocalypse. Like, it would be almost like if you could see a atomic bomb has gone off, but the shock wave of it moves just a couple of inches a day. So the shimmer is the shock wave. And within the shock wave, there's a lot of interesting stuff happening. And the essence of the movie is there's explorers who are going to go into the shimmer and see what the fuck is going on. So here are four qualities of the shimmer as articulated via the movie. Number one, it has a constantly growing area of effect. So the shimmer, the shockwave of this new event, is continuously growing. And right now it has a radius of only a couple miles, but it's unrelenting. Number two, all of the exploratory teams that have gone in before have either killed themselves or they have gone crazy and have killed each other. The third quality of the shimmer is that it generates or creates what is called retrograde amnesia. And I'll explain this later. And number four is there is this phenomenon of refraction that happens inside of the area of effect of the shimmer. And the way that they define refraction is it's rapid mutation and the cross-pollinization of genetic information between life forms. I think each of these are brilliant symbolic representations of the effects of the phenomenon that's happening on our planet right now. All right, so the shimmer is a mythic symbol for the realm that these new beings that we are sharing the planet with emerge from. We call it the internet, but that label will blind you, for now anchored to the myth of the shimmer. Whatever the internet is, it is like the shimmer. It is alien in the sense that it is a hyper object that we can't comprehend. From it emerges a new class of beings that we need to understand. I'll dive into this myth more on next and some of the following articles and podcasts that I do, but I want to focus on retrograde amnesia because it connects to my dream. So you should know about retrograde amnesia. Proposition: the beings that we crudely call the internet or algorithms or AI have an effect on human consciousness that is loosely but not technically like retrograde amnesia. So I have a degree in cognitive psychology, and in college I remember when we studied cases of retrograde amnesia. It was horrifying to try to empathize with the type of consciousness that would be stuck in this type of state. It's a rare but real condition. So the Nolan Brothers movie Memento is an excellent exhibition and description of what retrograde amnesia is and what it would be like subjectively. It is a kind of amnesia that happens after an injury to the brain. All of the memory before the injury is left unaffected, but no new memories can form. The person affected with retrograde amnesia can hold a thread of continuity until their attention switches contexts. So, example, they can follow the thread of a good joke, but after the punchline, they will forget who you are and how you got there. However, if they've learned any type of music that they can play on an instrument before the injury, you can ask them to play that song, and they can keep the thread of the current moment of continuity throughout the entire time that they play. So without music, the average thread of continuity is only a few minutes. But with the engagement of something like music, it can be 200 to 300% longer. So let's step out of the mythical language and get into technical language. An untrained relationship with the digital world via your phone or computer will incentivize your nervous system to task switch so often that you become mentally injured and you don't even notice that you're injured. The injury is to your attentional system. The injury results in your incapacity to keep a coherent thread over the course of hours or days or months or years. Your brain needs long stretches of deep focus in the same way that our body needs exercise. And without it, we appear to get sick. It takes about 15 minutes for your nervous system to drop in to any specific task. Think something like what it feels like to be in deep focus. One study found that the average employee will check their email or their Slack or their text messages every 3 to 5 minutes. The average television commercial happens every 7 minutes. Okay, so here's a good frame to see if your attentional system is injured. In the last week, how many times did you drop into a single activity, like walking or reading or having a conversation or working on a creative project, where you didn't check your phone or your computer or text messages or social media for at least 3 hours? So how many times in the last week have you gone 3 hours and have been present with a single task without stepping into the shimmer? The key here is not just not checking your phone or your computer, but it's about being dropped into a singular activity. For most people that I have polled for this question so far, the answer is zero. 0 times in the last week that they have had a 3-hour period where they have been dropped in to a single task without stumbling unconsciously into the shimmer. So we don't have scientific studies on what the healthy amount would be, but my intuition, which is informed by, you know, a lot of study and reading, is that like a healthy human would have at least 1 period like that per day, you know? And I think if we give a little bit of cushion, you could say 5 to 6 times a week would be like, that's what healthy would look like. But the most horrifying quality of this type of energy is that those with it don't notice they have it. Attentional injury blindness. So let's give it a name. The DSM psychiatrist might call it something like attentional injury blindness. Mythically, we could call it the shimmer effect. It's a kind of retrograde amnesia. Someone with attentional injury blindness simply doesn't notice that they check their phone more than 100 times per day, that they do this almost every day, and that they've been doing this for years. They don't notice that they task switch so frequently every day that they haven't dropped into a deep focus state since before phones got good enough to be carried in your pocket. Pause on that for a moment. Statistics would predict that the majority of the people listening to this right now are walking around with the shimmer effect. And it's not your fault. Humanity got hit by a mythic comet a couple of decades ago, and the shimmer effect has just started to eat us and we haven't noticed. We now live in a world so full of mentally injured human beings who don't notice that they're injured. But it's not all bad. There's a revolution. Really, there's a revelation. It is solved by walking. So these beings, mythically represented by the images of annihilation, aren't bad. They aren't evil. One of the reasons that we have such a hard time seeing the shimmer is because it doesn't fit into our frames of understanding. Good and evil make more sense than these beings. These beings are more like the sandworms in Dune. They're attracted to human attention. They want as much human attention as they can get. Their drive is relentless in a way that no organic animal can comprehend, and it is something that is disturbing. But these beings are also connecting us. These beings have saved my life. It is actually finding a podcast through Reddit when I was in college that introduced me for the first time in my life to two men having a conversation, and that those men actually enjoyed their life. I can't overstate it. I had literally never met an adult male who enjoyed his life. I didn't even have that model as something that was possible. And this is just one story of millions of stories of how the emergence of the shimmer has absolutely blessed people's lives. So even though the shimmer can ruin your life via the attentional injury blindness, they are also connecting us. These beings can be rode, like Paul rides the grandfather worm in Dune. Those who learn to ride these beings can bring new wells to villages in Africa. They can create 1,000 online forums that help 1 million people find answers to questions that can change the course of their lives. The defining skill of our time is cultivating the capacity for long bouts of deep focus on meaningful questions, and then intentionally going into the shimmer to share what you have learned with all of the other people who are in the shimmer without realizing that they are in the shimmer. You can begin to heal your injured mind by going on long walks without your phone. This is a good place to start. A more advanced training is to learn how to be in the shimmer for longer and longer bouts of time while doing meaningful work without task switching and getting distracted. On your walk, you can ask yourself the question, and this is a question given by one of our greatest magicians, Mary Oliver. And the question goes like this: what is it that you plan to do with your one wild, precious life? You'll know that you've healed your attentional injury blindness when, before you get back on your phone, you have an answer to that question. And that you know that whatever you're about to do in the shimmer is to serve that question. You'll know that you've healed your attentional injury blindness when deep focus is a daily ritual. The answer is not to deny or condemn the shimmer. The beginning of the revolution is committing to learning how to use the shimmer to wake up as many of our fellow brothers and sisters as we can. Because modernity is a sick beast slouching towards extinction that needs a new story. And the beings are creating the network that allow new myths to spread like wildfire. And only artists capable of long stretches of deep focus on the questions that matter most can birth these new stories. It is only these type of artists who can light those fires. The Shimmer Part 2. So a quick refresher on Part 1. Number 1, we live in a new world, one that we share with a new class of beings. These beings are beyond our current comprehension, so we have to use myth and symbol to begin to grok them. Number 3, The movie Annihilation's concept and representation of what they call the Shimmer is the best living myth to help us grok this new phenomenon. Number four, the effects of the Shimmer are 1, continuously growing area of effect. 2, the area of effect can cause mental illness and madness. 3, the area of effect can cause a kind of retrograde amnesia. And 4, the area of effect can cause refraction, which is the rapid influx of mutations and cross-pollinations of different genetic species. 5, these beings appear to desire to copy, replicate, and interweave all of us into it. So, from myth to practical, the Shimmer is a mythic symbol for the living organism that hides behind the phrase, quote, the digital world. The beings, or the aliens, are the different intelligent complex systems that are growing out of the Shimmer, things that we call AI, large language models, blockchain. It's like those are different species of organisms that are coming out of this phenomenon called the Shimmer. The area of effect of the Shimmer is whenever your attention is in this new world, the quote-unquote digital world. We're in the Shimmer right now. So the untrained navigation of the Shimmer increases the likelihood of self-harming, attempting suicide, and political polarization. Check out the work of Jonathan Haidt. He has a book coming out soon where he's going to really talk about how the emergence of the Shimmer and the stumbling into it that a generation of preteen boys and girls are falling into is causing an unprecedented increase in self-harm, suicide, and personality disorders in a way that we've never seen. And I'll let him make that argument in his book. But the Shimmer is not all bad. Trained navigation of the Shimmer will increase your likelihood of learning anything that you want to learn that any human has ever learned before and that it has been recorded. The trained navigation of the Shimmer will allow you to connect to almost anyone in the world. It is access to information and knowledge that is truly a pinnacle moment in recorded human history. It is something that no king could even have fathomed as a thing to desire. It has that much power and information. So it's not all bad. But the untrained navigation of the Shimmer causes attentional blindness injuries. The average person's attentional system is so shredded by the hyper-stimulatory environment that the Shimmer is, that they have forgotten that they have forgotten. They have forgotten that they have a soul, and that the default world is a samsaric automaton world that cries out for the brave, audacious artist to wake them up. And whether or not it is the Shimmer's intent, it is structured in a way where the audacious artist's art can spread through it like wildfire in a way that has never been available to humanity before. Which brings us to what the movie calls refraction, the fourth characteristic of the Shimmer. Memes, genes, and the great refracturing. The substrate of Annihilation Shimmer in the movie is biology. The atomic unit of biology is the gene. The substrate of the Shimmer as a symbol for the digital world is what Jung called the collective unconscious, and what less interesting artists call the memeplex. And as you can probably guess, the atomic unit of the memeplex is the meme. A phrase coined by Richard Dawkins, a meme is the fundamental unit of an idea that is capable of being replicated and mutated in one individual's mind, who then passes the meme to another mind. Since the arrival of our Shimmer, the digital world, the amount of new memes generated from the inception point to the present is more than the entire recorded history of humanity. We have produced more signal, like meaningful information, not just noise, from the birth of the internet to now than in the totality of recorded history. And if you want to fact check that, you can go read books like The Singularity from Ray Kurzweil. Every idea that enters the shimmer is copied, deconstructed, reassembled, and mutated along the way hundreds of thousands of times an hour, spreading through millions and billions of us in days or weeks. Jamie Wheel calls this explosion in meme refraction the Great Unraveling. John Vervaeke calls it the meaning crisis. Peter Singer calls it the precipice, and Joanna Macy calls it the passage. The shimmer is here, and it's changing everything. And the people capable of helping the most will be the artists and the poets and the activists that learn how to surf the shimmer. Not to deny the shimmer, or to avoid the shimmer, or to disassociate from the shimmer, or to pretend that if they just stay off of it and go get their private patch of land, that the area of effect of the shimmer won't one day come to their front door. So how do you surf the shimmer? Step one, notice it. Do you remember the moment that you moved from the physical world into the shimmer that eventually brought you to listen to this right now? Did you enter the shimmer consciously? Did you intend to find this podcast and to listen to it? Or did you arrive here in a state of retrograde amnesia where you actually don't know how you got here, what the moment was that you crossed from the physical world into the shimmer? Do you know how many times you've gone from the physical world into the shimmer just today? You have probably stepped into the shimmer over 100 times if you're listening to this in the evening, and probably the majority of them were unconscious. Statistically, if you're between the ages of 18 and 35, you check your phone between 120 and 220 times a day. That means that if you sleep for 8 hours, you're checking your phone between every 6 to 12 minutes. And that means that the average person might intentionally, consciously step into the shimmer 1-5 times a day. 5% out of the 100. This is attentional injury blindness. So here's a practice that you can begin to do to cultivate noticing the shimmer. Put a note card over your phone for a day. And every time you go to check it, you have to mark a notch on the card before you can look at your phone. You can also make a note on the other side of the note card where you laugh at yourself every time that you realize that you somehow got on your phone today without checking the note card. So I want to zoom in here. Most of you won't do this because it's too uncomfortable to notice how addicted we are to the shimmer. So most of you listening to this will not try this technique. But the ones of you that do, notice the, because this is so fascinating to me, intend to mark the note card every time you go to look at your phone. And then allow yourself to recognize how many times today you will be on your phone and you somehow didn't even interact with the note card. The addictive unconscious drive was so strong that you got onto your phone without marking on the piece of paper. And so on one side, you can mark down every time you get on your phone. But then on the other side of the paper, you can mark down every time that you got on your phone today without marking it down on the piece of paper, which is just a deeper measurement of the depth and the profundity of our unconsciousness. So you put a note card over your phone and you set the intention that every time you look at your phone, you're going to make a notch on the card. And also have the grace to laugh at yourself when you catch yourself on your phone without having marked the card at all. It's like Neo falling on the first jump when he wakes up from the Matrix. Almost everyone will find themselves on their phone without having marked the card, even though they have made the intention to do it, because the depth of the attentional injury blindness is that deep. And it's okay. The fact that you're doing this is going to change the course of your life. So the invitation is to do this a couple of days in a row. And what you'll notice is something that is called the reactivity effect, and it's fascinating. Reactivity is the effect where we unconsciously begin to attune ourselves when we start to track ourselves. And it to me, is the evidence of what Buddhism calls dharma. I have a post on this where I go deeper into this, but the essence of it is, there is a phenomenon that is so statistically profound that researchers have to design experimental conditions to try to get around it, because it obscures the data in a way where they can't draw a correlation. And it's that whenever we start to track, whenever we start to monitor a honest metric that truthfully reflects some aspect of our lives, and we look at it every day, for most of us, and there are some cases where this is not true, but for most of us, what happens is we unconsciously begin to make the behavior changes that impact that number changing. So for example, if you check your weight every day, there's such a profound unconscious weight loss effect in these studies when people just start to monitor their weight every day, that it gets in the way of them measuring the effectiveness of their drug or of their intervention. People who smoke, or people who do any type of thing that they would like to do less of, if they track it, they do it less. Without going too far down rabbit holes, that to me is evidence that there is an intelligence inside of us that if we just gave it honest feedback that cultivated awareness, it will work on our own behalf to help us heal / become who we actually are. All right, so a more adept awareness cultivation practice that you guys can do is it's the note card plus what is called noting. So noting is a technique that is taught in Buddhism, but before I get ahead of myself, I'll just read you what I wrote. So for this technique, you do the note card technique, but also note these four questions every time you go to check your phone. So I don't advise you do this until you do the first version where you just track how many times you get on your phone, and you do that for a week so that you can get the number down from 220 to, 12. Once you do that, I highly recommend you try this technique out, and it's that every time you go to look at your phone, you ask yourself these four questions. What time is it? What environment am I in right now? Number three is, what was the thought that occurred the moment before the craving to check your phone happened? And number four, and this is even a deeper question, is what was the somatic feeling the moment before the craving to check happened? At the end of the day of doing this note card plus the noting technique, if you have about half an hour to an hour, you can ask yourself these following questions to give yourself an experience that can trigger a moment of metacognition that can change the course of your life. So here are the questions. At the end of the day, after doing the note card plus the noting technique, number one, what was I desiring to feel by checking my phone? I look at each of these moments where I checked my phone. What was it that I was desiring to feel that I felt that checking the phone could illuminate? Number two, does checking my phone actually fulfill that desire? Because hint, if you're checking your phone 220 times a day, it's likely not fulfilling a genuine desire. Three, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being completely sleepwalking and 10 being someone in complete, sustained, intentional clarity throughout the day, where do I feel I am on that scale? And more importantly, do I actually believe that a 10 is possible? meaning do I actually believe that humans are capable of that type of attention? And really what I mean is, do I believe I'm capable of that type of attention? For what it's worth, Buddhism is a 2,600-year-old wisdom tradition that is trying to articulate to the West, the frenetic, distracted, confused West. Guys, you can train your attention. All humans who can understand the words that I'm saying right now, if they have enough mind to comprehend language, they have the capacity to train their attention, just like it's a muscle, to the point where you have a stable, coherent, maintainable thread of attention that you can consciously place on whatever objects of phenomenon you want to, and that can be as effortless as walking. So for a child, it took us 3,000 plus attempts to learn how to walk, and now we walk without it taking any type of bandwidth from us that is meaningful. What Buddhism is trying to tell the West is that you can train your attention, your quote-unquote focus, to be like a laser when you want it to be a laser, and to turn it into a diffused cloud of open awareness when you want it to be a diffused cloud of open awareness, and that is something that you can cultivate to the point where it feels like walking. And so just to give you guys a sense of what I'm trying to convey here, most people who know me, you know, would say that I have a very high capacity to maintain my focus. My personal rating to this question on a scale of 1 to 10 is I think I'm somewhere around a 3. And what I mean by that is I can go hours and stay on one task and not task switch. But the truth is that the majority of my day, if I'm not working or I'm not working out, or I'm not in a deep conversation with someone I care about, all of that in-between time, I am unconscious. I am unconsciously falling into my different cues and programmings and habits. And it's like I'm aware enough to be able to appreciate just the painful truth of how massively unconscious I still am and how untamed my attention is, and how many times I enter the shimmer unconsciously. You know, like it's probably over 50 times a day. So I have days where I'm locked in, where, you know, I don't unintentionally get on my phone even once, but that's rare. You know, that's probably once every 2 weeks. My average day, if I'm locked in, is I probably check my phone unconsciously maybe 18 to 25 times on like a good average day. And then on a average bad day, you know, it's fucking 80. And it's humbling, but it's cool too, you know, to, there's something in me that almost has like an existential kink of exposing my ignorance to myself and just looking at it. This is an important and powerful way for you to just check yourself for how severely you have attentional blindness injury. So to end, whatever it is that you desire, whatever your heart secretly yearns that you finally acknowledge is your life's task, the great adventure of your life is to honor the answer to the question that Mary Oliver put to us. What are you going to do with your one precious life? And once you have an answer, the task then becomes to remember it when you enter the shimmer. And what I want to offer is that if you learn how to keep that thread of your answer to that question every day, like it's the most important thing for you to remember. Providence will come to meet you. Synchronicities, what we would call miracles, will start to be attracted to you. And if you can bring that thread into the shimmer, you will find that the thing that will begin to be refracted and to mutate and to grow is the authentic thread of your soul being woven into the shimmer. So the invitation, if you so accept, is to notice the shimmer today and to step into it with the answer to that question on your lips, and to be here as an artist instead of a consumer.